Seems to be recording.
Okay.
Alrighty. Hello everyone. I'm the intern that's supposed to be introducing myself. My name is Steve Gottlieb. I'm an intern for the Center for the Jewish Future. Welcome to the Arbatsville Kol Yom Rishon. On October 6th, we're going to be having a Yom Iyun on Teshuvah featuring Dr. David Pelkowitz, Rav Moshe Zvi Weinberg, and Professor Nechama Price. If anyone has any questions about the programming or logistics or anything about this program, I'm apparently now the go-to guy. I'll be learning a lot of it along with you. Hopefully you can forgive me. But welcome to Rabbi Nathanael Wiederblank. Rabbi Wiederblank is a Magid chair at Yeshiva University. He teaches college students as well as Smicha students on the subjects of Tanakh, Talmud, Halakha, Jewish philosophy, and Jewish philosophy within both REIT and the Yeshiva program. And he's going to be speaking today on adjusting the sukkah tarp on Yom Tov. Rabbi Wiederblank can take it away when ready.
Okay, thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. It's wonderful to see familiar faces. So this year is actually my first time building my own sukkah. I've had this chus of helping build my parents' sukkah, my in-law's sukkah for many years. And one of the many questions that I've been thinking about in building a sukkah, should we get a shlak? A shlak, for those of you who might not know, is a tarp that is put on top of a sukkah. And having a shlak is something very convenient, because oftentimes, if you don't have a shlak, and I've never actually had a shlak, I'm not sure if I would even be able to build one if I tried, but in theory, at the very least, after it's rained, so it's no longer raining, but for quite a while, the sukkah is still quite uncomfortable. It's dripping. You don't quite know, can we go into the sukkah? Can we not go into the sukkah? So the advantage of having a tarp on top is that as soon as it stops raining, you take off the tarp and your sukkah is good as new. So that's a very convenient thing. Certainly, halachically, one isn't obligated to have such a thing. And the truth is that if your sukkah is uncomfortable, even if it's no longer raining, one would still be exempt from sitting in a sukkah. We assume that mitzvah is patur in a sukkah. You don't need the actual rain. However, certainly, it's a nice feature. But having a tarp presents a very interesting question, which is what I'd like to talk to you about today. And I'd like to look at the question not just in a local sense, namely the halachos of having a tarp, but more globally to consider how we address such a question, and specifically the broader questions that arise here. So what is the halachic issue of the tarp? I guess there are a number of them, but the one that I'm going to be considering with you today is the concern of zoreya, or at least of watering your grass. What do I mean to say? So it's just rained. It's now no longer raining. I want to remove my tarp on Shabbos or on Yontif. The problem is that my tarp is full of rainwater. And when I take it off, that rainwater will end up in my grass. And we know you're not allowed to water on Shabbos. So the question is it permissible to take off my tarp in a way that will certainly cause the water to drain onto my grass? And I know that will happen. It's impossible to remove this tarp without causing the rainwater to drain onto my grass. So is it permissible for me to do this on Yontif or on Shabbos or not? That's the question I'd like to discuss with you today. So the first question we have to consider is it actually prohibited to water my grass on Shabbos or Yontif, right? If it's okay to water your grass, so then it will be okay to open your tarp on Shabbos and Yontif. So is it permissible to water your grass on Shabbos and Yontif? Is watering one of the 39 melachos? Not as far as I know. So if it's not going to be one of the 39 melachos, it might still be prohibited because it might be a tolda. What's a tolda? A tolda is an activity that resembles an av. It resembles one of the 39 melachos, and it too is aser midoraisa. It's prohibited biblically to violate a tolda. Now, watering is a tolda of which melacha? So actually, this is a dispute in the Gemara towards the beginning of Moed Katan. There are two views. The view of Rabba is that watering is a violation of the melacha of choresh. Choresh is plowing. What does watering have to do with plowing? The answer is that watering has a similar effect to plowing. Watering softens the ground. Plowing softens the ground. If we look at the effect of the act, then there is a similarity between watering and plowing. And therefore, according to Rabba, if you water on Shabbos, you're in violation of melachas choresh. Rabbi Yosef disagrees. He says it's a problem of zorea, of seeding. How so? Because the goal of seeding is to promote growth. And when I water my grass, so I am promoting growth. It's going to grow better when I water. What exactly are they debating? So Tosos over there in Moed Katan understands that the question is, do we look more at the effect of the act, basar maisa, or do we look at the intention, the goal, the broader goal of the act, basar machshava? One way or the other, though, watering your grass on Shabbos is a melacha deoraisa, be it zoreya, be it choresh, you certainly cannot water your grass on Shabbos or Yantif. So, assuming you can't water your grass on Shabbos and Yantif, we have a problem. Can I open my tarp when I know inevitably the result will be my grass being watered? Yes?
It's only an issue if your sukkah is in the yard, but in a Washington Heights sukkah.
In a Washington Heights sukkah, you probably will not have any problem at all. That's correct. But if your sukkah is near the grass or the like, then it will be a problem. You're absolutely correct. And oftentimes this issue is not relevant for urban sukkos. But again, sometimes it is. So the first possible basis for leniency is in source number one. This is a Yerayim, Rabbi Lazar Mimitz, one of the great Rishonim. And let's take a look at what he says. B'tchilas moed katan amrinan, mashkem mayim lezrayim, chayev mishamay, masrinan bay, Rav Amar Misham Choresh, Rav Yosef Amar Misham Zoreya. There's a debate. Why is it that it's aser to water on Shabbos? Is it Zoreya? Is it Choresh? Umasek Abay Dechayv Misham Choresh Umisham Zoreya. The truth is, there's a third view, which the Reim Paskins like. Reim says it's both, which is an interesting perspective, that one act with one intent can be Chayev for two Malachos. Not everyone agrees to the Reim or Abay on that matter, but one way or the other, it's certainly Chayev, so we need not worry so much about the melacha for now. Hilkach, tzarech ha'adam lizaher. A person has to be careful. B'makom shasavim v'zra'im tzrichim l'mayim. In a place where grasses or seeds need water, kegon b'mos ha'kayetz, for example, during the summer, shelo yashlech shamayim, you can't pour water there, v'lo yirchatz yadav aleim, or wash your hands over them, v'lo yashdin aleim, you can't urinate over there. Afal pi shelo yiskaven l'gidulam, even though you don't intend to promote growth, psik resha v'lo yamos, it's an inevitable consequence of your action. Sheyefsher shelo yoil l'gadlam, because it's impossible that it not happen. So the Reim is saying that, let's say I want to wash my hands, and my intention is not at all to water my grass. I simply want to wash my hands or wash my dishes or even urinate. We actually don't paskin like this Yerayim in the Shulchan Aruch, because we think that urinating is not something that promotes growth. It's actually harmful to growth. But be that as it may, with respect to the other halachos, like Netilas Yadayim, right? I'm having a picnic outside. I want to wash my hands. So he says it's aser, but I don't intend to water the grass. I don't intend to promote growth. I'm simply trying to clean my hands. No, the answer is it's inevitable consequence. It's what we call a psik resha. And a psik resha is certainly aser. So too, it would seem that if I take off my shlak, even though my intention is not to water my grass, my intention is simply to remove the shlak from my sukkah, but an inevitable consequence of my shlak removal is certainly the watering of my grass. So therefore, it should be aser. So I want to look here carefully. Is there any basis for leniency that we could discern within the Yerayim? Yes.
Well, you already highlighted Tzrichim L'mayim.
Excellent.
Normally, Sukkos comes out in the fall, I think. And by that time, usually your grasses are not starved for water. So that if that's a condition, that it has to be tzrichin l'mayim, then you've now avoided the problem.
Excellent. So, and if you note even after where I highlighted, it says kigon b'mosek hayetz, for example, in the summer. So the first answer is, if it is the case that my watering or my removing of the tarp will not promote growth, it will have no effect, no consequence on the quality of my grass, then it would seem that according to Urayim, it would be okay. And sometimes this is the case. After a very substantial rainfall, my grass is quite saturated with water, and a little more water, another half a liter or a liter that comes from the tarp on top of my sukkah that ends up in my grass will have no effect. So if it is the case that my grass is saturated and this will make no difference, then you could certainly argue it would be permissible. However, I don't think this always helps. And that's because oftentimes, even if it's just rained, the more, the merrier. A little more water will improve the quality of my grass. Yesterday it rained. Yesterday afternoon it rained, I think. Last night it rained. I got up this morning to go to shul, and I passed somebody's house whose sprinkler was running. Now, it could just be that they had it on the timer and they didn't want to turn it off. But the truth is also that that even if, to use your words, your grass isn't starved for water, but a little more will help. It will make it a little better. And even if that's not my intention. Now, you could say, well, I couldn't care less, right? At this point, it's just rained. Another half a liter or a liter or a gallon or 2 gallons, however much water. So I don't care. So it might be that I don't care. But it might be lo nichale, or, well, to be more precise, lo achbasle. But a psik resha de lo achbasle, or de lo nichale, psik resha that I don't care about, is still aser. It might only be aser midrabanan. There is a view in the Rishonim, the Aruch, who says that a psik resha de lo nichale, or de lo achbasle, is mutter. Now, according to the Aruch, if this is inevitable consequence, but I couldn't care less, then it would be permissible. However, we generally speaking don't accept that view. We assume that even though I don't care, since it's the inevitable consequence of my action, it's still aser. So the fact is that this water will end up on my grass, and it will improve the grass, even if ever so slightly. So it might be lo nichale, might be lo achbasle, might be achbasle also. I remember over the summer, my kids have a backyard little pool, and they were dumping out the water, and they were just dumping it on the driveway. So I said, you may as well empty the pool into the flowers, into the garden. You know why? Yet you're wasting this water anyway. At least get something out of it. Accomplish something with this water. So sometimes it might even be nichale. Sometimes, you're right, it might be lo nichale, lo achbasle. I don't care, it just rained. But if your ground is not entirely saturated with water, then it will help. It will help. It will promote growth to some degree, and therefore it should still be aser because of a psik resha. And even if it's only a psik resha de lo achbasle, so true, it's only aser midrabanan, but there's still an issue that we have to deal with. Yes?
Does it make a difference? I mean, the Gemara was talking about a situation where they were in Bavel or at Stral. Obviously, in the northeast, for example, it rains continuously, so it's a different situation. Do we factor in also seasonality? Because, for example, you mentioned grass. Grass theoretically is not really going to be growing that much in September or October.
So I was told, and maybe I'm wrong, that a wet fall is very good for plant growth. I don't know if that's because if that relates to next spring or even if it's no longer growing, it's helpful. So you have to ask your gardener. I'm not a gardener, and I don't really know. And if it is the case that this will have no effect, then like we see in Urayim, it would be okay. And sometimes that will be the case. But if that's not the case, if it will help, if it will promote growth, then it'll be okay. So as I said, again, it's not yet Sukkot time. We still have a month to go. But I see plenty of people with sprinkler systems still running their sprinkler every day. So I imagine that they think Those are the people with the green grasses, right? So I imagine that they think that even at this point in time, having a wet fall is helpful. So again, this is, you know, there's a Metzias question, and obviously you have to solve the Metzias question. But if I'd like to address this question, assuming it is the case that it will be helpful in terms of promoting growth, then are there any other stadim lahakel? Is there a basis for leniency? But you're certainly correct. If, in fact, it is the case that it is no effect, then it would be permissible. Yes?
How is the rain applied to a steady crop? Because
yes.
Grass doesn't yield fruit.
That's true. Yes. The answer is it does. It does. Promoting growth, whether it's because you want the fruit or because you want a green lawn, is still choresh or zoreh or the like. Okay. So there's a very important distinction that we have to discuss. This relates to Melechus Shabbos in general, and I think is relevant to here as well, which is what's actually happening when I remove my tarp. So there's two possibilities. Either my tarp will drain directly into the grass, or the second possibility, and this is often the case when people build their sukkos on their driveway or their patio or the like, is that when you remove the tarp will drain onto your driveway and then roll into your grass. It won't stay there. There's a lot of water. It'll drain. But it doesn't directly go into the grass. Instead, it basically indirectly reaches the grass. When we're talking about something indirect, so we have to figure out, is that aser? And, of course, there's a very famous principle in halacha that comes up in many areas of halacha of grama. Grama is indirect causation. This is relevant in ritzicha, with respect to murder, with respect to hilchos shechita, with respect to nezikin, and with respect to hilchos Shabbos and yantif. So, first of all, we have to figure out, is this actually grama? Is it considered grama when I pour the... when I remove the tarp drains onto my driveway, will drain onto my front yard. Is that grama? That's the first question. And the second question is, if it is grama, is it mutter or aser in this case? So let's take a look at source number two. Source number two is with respect to a fire. And I wrote here in brackets, a fire, she'en ba sakanas nefashos. That's very important. This halacha is almost never relevant practically, because anytime you have a fire, rachmana litzlan, in your house, something happens, the candles tip over, and the tablecloth is caught on fire, and it's spreading. So we're dealing with a situation of sakanas nefashos, and you should put it out immediately. And if you can't put it out, call the fire department, and you shouldn't think twice about it. And that's because even if everybody in your house, you know they are, and you could leave, but the fire could spread. It can put people's life in danger and the like. The question that the Gemara and the Shulchan Aruch over here is talking about is a case where you know that there is no sakanas nefashos if you don't put out this fire. There's not only no sakanas nefashos, there's no safek sakanas nefashos when mechal Shabbos, even for a safek, a possibility of danger to life. And if you try to do what the Gemara says over here, you know, put the barrels around and then put out the fire indirectly, that might not work. It might take too long. The fire might spread. People's life might be in danger. And therefore, the proper thing to do would be to put out the fire in the quickest and most efficient way, lest someone's life be in danger. But let's say, theoretically, you have a situation where you are certain that there's no issue of sakanas nefashos. So if there's no issue of sakanas nefashos, then kiboy, extinguishing a fire, is not permitted on Shabbos. You can't just put out the fire on Shabbos. And even though I want to put out the fire because if I don't, my property might be damaged and I might lose money, you can't just violate Shabbos to prevent the loss of money. So is there anything I could do to put out this fire that's now spreading, let's say, on my tablecloth, to prevent it, to put it out, prevent additional loss of money, but at the same time without violating Shabbos? So the Gemara says like this: Osin mechitza b'chol hakelim. You can make a mechitza around the fire with vessels, bein meleim, bein reikanim, whether they're full vessels of water or empty vessels b'shvil shelo tavor adleika, so that the fire doesn't spread further. Lo tasa kol, and the Gemara says, why is this permissible? Lo tasa kol malacha asiyu d'aser grama shari. The reason why this is permissible is the Torah says you may not do malacha asiya, and this is grama. This is indirect. What does that mean? Indirect. What do? I see this fire spreading. I surround the fire with barrels of water. There's a discussion of what type of, in a Gemara, what type of barrels you could use and the like. Need not concern us right now. So you surround the fire with barrels of water, and as the fire spreads, the fire will reach the barrels, and the barrels will break, they will burst, and put out the fire. So this is a brilliant way to put out the fire through grama. How is it that we permit grama? The Gemara says, Asiyahu de'asar, losasa komlach, asiyahu de'asar grama shari. So grama is permissible on Shabbos. Now, there's a couple things to consider. The first is, over here, the Gemara says grama shari, grama is permissible. Does that mean that grama is actually permissible? So, if we take a look at the Shulchan Aruch, source 3, when codifying this halacha, it talks about a fire that's spreading, and the Gemara says you're allowed to use barrels to put it out, and even though it's inevitable, vada yisbaku, it's not just inevitable, but let's keep in mind over here, this is your intention, right? Why am I surrounding this fire with barrels? Because I want the fire to go out. Mechavin lekach, still, gram kiboy mutter. The Mechaber says, grama, indirect extinguishing is permissible. Hagah, the Rama says, b'makom pseida. The Rama, quoting the Mardechai, says this heter of grama is not, even though the Gemara says shari, which might sound like it's actually permissible, the Rama says it's only mutter b'makom hafsed, like in the Gemara's case, where if I don't put out the fire, it's going to be a loss of money. So we have a Gemara that says grama is okay, but the Rama says grama is okay in the circumstances similar to the ones discussed in the Gemara, b'makom hafsed. So many of you, I'm sure, have heard about all these grama machines, grama wheelchairs, and grama light switches, and grama cars, and telephones. Grama spaceships, and grama telephones, right? So those, at least if you follow the Rama, at least for Ashkenazim, first of all, you have to figure out, are they actually grama, which is a very important question, not at all a simple one, maybe for another discussion, maybe we could talk about it a little today. Not all of those are clear-cut grama, but if assuming they are grama, they're still only going to be mutter b'makom hafseid. There might be other cases where we're going to be lenient for cholim or other cases where there's a real need for leniencies in hospital settings, in army settings, and the like. They're not permissible without a heter, which of course is going to be relevant for us. Do we have any heter over here? So we're going to have to get back to that question. Now, another question to think about, and again, we're not going to be able to fully address this question now because we don't have time, but it's worth noting, is that this Gemara in Shabbos that says that grama is permissible on Shabbos because lo sasa kol melacha siu da'asar grama shari seems to contradict another Gemara, Gemara in Bava Kama. Gemara in Bava Kama is discussing the melacha of Zorah. Zorah, winnowing, was done, at least in the olden days, by taking the wheat after the wheat was threshed. So there is a taroves, a mixture of wheat and chaff, and you take a pitchfork, you throw it up in the air, the wind blows away the chaff, because the chaff is lighter, and the grain remains, it falls down. Now, that, in a sense, is an act of grama. I'm not separating it myself. The wind is doing the separation. I'm simply throwing it up in the air and separating it. And the Gemara says that actually, in the realm of Nezikin, that would seem to be grama. Grama's pater in Nezikin. Why is it chayav on Shabbos? And the Gemara says, losasa kol melacha, meleches machsheves asra Torah. And here, since I intend to do it, yes, it's grama, but it's mechavim lekach. It's grama, but it's an intentional grama. And meleches machsheves asra Torah, we learn from the Mishkan that melachos are asr. Melachas machshev is usually actually is something which is the basis for leniency in melacha. We say melachas machshev is asra Torah, and therefore maybe einet shricha legufa is mutter, or davar shein miskaven is mutter, not mutter, but pater. or mekalkel, or the like. Usually, when we talk about melachos mel shavus, those are reasons why you're not chayv midoraisa. Usually, it's also midrabanan anyway, but not chayv midoraisa. Here, we have a gemara where melachos mel shavus is a reason to be chayv. Since I intend to do melacha, even though it's grama, it's still chayv. Now, the rush on that gemara seems to limit this to the melacha of zora. When the Torah says that zora, that winnowing is usher, it's telling you it's usher, even though it's grama. But other rishonim, the simple reading of the gemara and Rashi, seem to imply that this is a broad principle. So we have two contradictory sources. One source tells us that grama is chayav iser derais on Shabbos because melachos mel shavus aser Torah. On the other hand, we have this gemara on Shabbos saying grama is mutter, at least mutter bakum hesed on Shabbos as yuda aser grama udashari. When is grama chayav? When is it potter and even mutter? Is a very important question. Again, a broad question, one which we won't tackle right now, but it is important to remember. In this case, we're assuming grama is mutter. Is that such a pashut assumption? Yes?
But in this case, that's the only way you do the
melacha. That's correct. So one possibility is to say that it's only in the case of Zora where that's true, because that's the only way to do the melacha. That seems to be the approach of the Rosh. Rashi, though, in Bava Kamma, sounds like this is indicating a broader principle. And it's a very interesting question. The Rishonim and Achronim discuss this in all sorts of cases, putting wheat in a water mill, right? Is that Nisr Deraisa or is it Grama, for example? Anyway, so...
Time lapse.
Yeah, so I shall get to that in one moment. But let's assume for the moment that in our case, if it's Grama, it's Mutter. So, meaning to say, if it's Grama, or at least Potter, if it's grama, meaning to say when I take off my tarp, the water drains onto the driveway drains into my front yard, is that mutter? Is that potter? So let's assume that would be potter if it's grama. Is it grama? So if you look at source number 6, the Gemara in Sanhedrin here is discussing not grama in Hilchos Shabbos, but actually grama in murder. Amar of Papa Haiman dekafse lechavre v'ashkel aleh bidkud maya. So it's not a very nice thing to do to your friend, but you tie him up, and then you release a stream of water onto him, and he drowns and dies. So, Gire Didehu, these are his arrows, Umechayev, and you're Chayev, meaning to say it's not Grama. Ritzicha Begrama is not Chayev Misa. Certainly it's Aser, but it's not Chayev Misa. So this is considered your direct arrows and your chayv misa. It's not grama. Hani mila b'koach rishon. That's true. If he dies b'koach rishon, directly, aval b'koach sheni, indirectly, grama b'almahu, and your potter. What does koach sheni mean? Rashi says, hainu shenicho b'richuk k'tsas. So he's not right next to the flow of water that's been released. He's somewhat distant. V'amayim lo naflo alav miyad. The water doesn't fall on him immediately. Now Rashi here brings up some factors which are going to be very important. There's distance, there's a time delay. There's also a very important debate here between Rashi and the Rama in terms of how to understand what's considered koach rishon and what's considered koach sheni. The debate between Rashi and Rama over here is actually very relevant to almost all of these grama machines. If you follow Rashi's view, that might lead to a much more lenient position on grama machines. A time delay might be enough, even if it's built into the system. According to the Rama, perhaps there's less basis for leniency and the Rav actually was of the position, as well as many of his Talmidim, that you have to be choshish for Shitas HaRama, which means that these grama machines are much more questionable because it's a system built in. Even if you build in a time delay, it's all built into the system. But again, that's a topic for another time. I would submit that in our case, everybody would concede that this is grama. Meaning, so everybody would concede that when you pick up your tarp, and by picking up the tarp, the water falls down, lands into your driveway, and then drains into your front yard, that would be considered koach sheni, as described by the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It would be grama. And again, grama will probably be aser d'rabanan, but it would still be grama. So we still seem to be stuck, right? Perhaps this is grama, and perhaps it's even a psikresha de lo nichale, so it's a grama b'psikresha, but Grama is still Aser, true Aser Drabanan, but Aser. Psikresha Delonichale is Aser, true Aser Drabanan. So it's a double Drabanan. Double Drabanans, generally speaking, are still Aser. There are times where we're lenient for double Drabanans, Malcolm Hafseid or the like. But this is a double Drabanan, and there doesn't seem to be grounds for leniency just because it's a double Drabanan. However, the question we can consider is perhaps there is a leniency on another account. Maybe it is the case that grama bipsik resh is mutter. Now, even though we say grama is asur midrabanan, maybe that's only grama when it's just grama, like gram kiboy, putting out the fire. But when it's grama bipsik resh, now that psik resh is still davar shenu miskavein, it's not an intentional act, it's an inevitable consequence, but it's unintentional. In the case where gram is usher, that's a case where it's intentional, right? Like putting the barrels around the fire. I definitely intend to put out the fire. It's mechavein. It's grama, but it's mechavein. So grama b'mechavein is usher, at least shalom b'makom hefseid. At least when there's no loss. But the question is, what about grama b'eino miskavein? Yes, it's a grama, but it's an unintentional act. It's unintentional but inevitable. So it's grama b'psik resha. Dov grama eino miskaven psik resha lo achbaslei. Is that usher? That's the question we really need to solve. If we could show that a grama b'psik resha lo nichalei is mutter, then my problem is solved. If that's not the case, if we say psik resha lo nichalei is usher, grama is usher, so the two of them together are usher, so it's a double drabanan, but it's still usher, then we're stuck. So that's really what we need to find out. We need to figure out, is there a basis for leniency for grama bipsik resha? Now, there's actually a case in the Shulchan Aruch, source 8, comes from a Gemara in Erevin, that seems to actually discuss more or less our exact case. And it seems to be permissible. So perhaps we can extrapolate from this Gemara in Erevin, the Shulchan Aruch, source 8, that we could be lenient in our case. So what's the discussion over here in Shulchan Aruch, source 8? It's pretty small print. Let me just give you the background over here. The discussion over here is talking about a person who wants to release water into their chatzer, their courtyard, but the problem is that it will roll out of their courtyard and into the Rishus HaRabim, which is a problem of Hotzah. You're not allowed to carry from a Rishus HaYachad to a Rishus HaRabim. In the days before indoor plumbing, there were probably lots of things that people would want to dump out. They're washing their, even clean stuff, you know, they're washing their dishes, they're washing their hands. They want to have their Shabbos Suda. They have this bowl, you know, of water after they wash the Tehillas Yadayim. They want to make more room. So during the week, what would they do? They would just dump it into their chatzer, would roll into the Rishus HaRabim, and it would drain that way. Okay? There weren't sewer systems, but life wasn't easy in those days. So the question is that okay? So the Gemara says, well, it's okay, but if your chatzer is very small, it's only 4 amos by 4 amos, then that's a problem. And therefore, what should you do? You should make a hole, and the water will drain into the hole, and then it's okay. Well, what about if I made my hole, so the water will drain into my hole? The only problem is that my hole is already full. So effectively, when I pour the water into my chatzer, it will drain into the Rishus HaRabim, because the hole that I've dug is already full of water. So let's look at the Shulchan Aruch source 8. Chatzer, shepchusa midalad amos al dalad amos, a chatzer, a courtyard that's smaller than 4 by 4 amos, shismucha l'rishus harabim, that's adjacent to the public domain, ein shofchin l'socha mayim b'shabbos b'mos achama. You can't pour water in it in the summer. When the ground's hard, it won't get absorbed. Shekevan she'ein ba dalet amos, ein sasayim mayim she'adam asui l'shtamish b'chol yom, ro'i livalaba. Typically, a person uses 2 sa of water each day, and those 2 sa of water will not be absorbed into your chatzer, and therefore they're going to end up draining into the Rishus HaRabim. V'adikilu shofich ma'im shofich l'Rishus HaRabim. It says, no, you pour directly into the Rishus HaRabim. L'kach tzarech la'asus guma, so you have to make a pitcher, techalala machzekes asayim, that holds 2 sasayim of water. Now skip a little bit later on to the Shulchan Aruch, where it's bolded again. The Kevan she yaseh guma, but once you've made that pit, yachol lishpoch ba kol mashi yirtza. Then you could pour as much as you want. Now this doesn't seem to make any sense. The pit, the hole only holds two sasayim. If I pour three sa into the chatzir, what's going to happen? The water is going to go right into the Rishus HaRabim. So what does this help? Take a look at the Mishnah Berurah, source number 9, top of page 3. Yachol lishpoch, v'afilu nismala haguma me'erev Shabbos, even if the pit is already filled up, even on Erev Shabbos, you don't start Shabbos with a full empty pit, you started Shabbos with a full pit. Shofich lesocha, you may pour into it. Why? Dekevan de b'doraisa lesi surah, kiyim b'shofich lehedya. The issue of d'oraisa is only when you pour directly from Rishus HaYachad into Rishus HaRabim. Rak shetiknu chachamim guma zecher l'shabbos. The whole purpose of the pit is only a zecher l'shabbos. You don't get into the habit. In other words, it's a reminder that you may not pour from Rishus HaYachad and Rishus HaRabim. They required the building of the pit. Shelo yishkach v'yashlichem lehedya l'shabbos. So you don't forget and pour directly into the public domain. V'kevan de'ka hekera al yedei asis haguma. As long as you have a heker, some type of reminder by digging the pit, shari is permissible. Umehai time anami etir lishpoch koma sheyirtza alagum af shaguma machzekes raksasayim. And therefore, once you've had the heker, it's good enough. Even though you're pouring 10 gallons of water and your guma only holds 2, because you still have that reminder. Not only that, it's something that you're happy about. It's a psikreshet nichale, because you don't want the water pooling in your chatzer. Kadesh lo yistanev chatzero, your chatzer won't become dirtied by this dirty water. Filachi shari mikol makom zocheru al yedei asis haguma v'lo gazru bay. Right. So what is this, and why is this permissible? It's a type of grama, as Rashi in source 10 from Erevin says on this actual Gemara, Mishum, source number 10, Mishum deha lav iugufe elame lein yotzin, you're not pouring it into the Rishus HaRabim, it goes out on its own. Hilkach kilo mechavein shari lechatchila. As long as you don't have kavana, it is motor lechatchila. So, I would submit that this is exactly what I want to do over here. I want to take off my tarp, and the tarp causes the water to run into the driveway. On its own, it goes, here it's not an issue of hotza, it's an issue of zireya, but it's the same process. It runs into from the driveway into my front yard, it waters the grass, it should be aser. It should be aser. So, seemingly, I have a explicit paradigm in the Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Shabbos permitting me to do this. Now, we still haven't explained why this is permissible, but just like it's mutter to dump my water into my chatzer, assuming I have a pit, even though it goes into Sharabim, because it's grama, so too it should be permissible to remove the tarp, even though the water ends up in the street. Yes?
You're missing the heker here.
So here, chora, there's no need for a heker. They were misakin heker in terms of hotzah. They weren't misakin heker over here. Here's not an issue of hotzah. It's an issue of Zoreya. Moreover, it's a lot better because I'm not even pouring it directly onto the chatzar, like in that case, where you're pouring the water directly onto the chatzar. I'm simply lifting up the tarp, and the tarp, then the water flows down. So it's better in a couple of respects. So if that's permissible, certainly this should be permissible. Yes?
Two things. First of all, what if your sukkah is like, you have a little like tiny cement area, and there's grass all around. So when you take off the tarp, the water's rolling off the
So top. If it rolls directly onto the grass, then it's going to be much more difficult to prohibit, to permit, unless, like we said before, the grass is already saturated and you're accomplishing nothing, that is much more problematic. However, the question is there a way to permit it by doing this? Either because it naturally rolls onto the cement before rolling onto your grass, or even if it didn't do that, so you can set up, take a piece of wood or something like that, so that when it drains onto something other than the grass, even though it's going to roll into the grass. So that's our question. So again, we seem to have... Yeah?
There's no mention of grama here at all. It seems like this isn't a grama case. Otherwise, it doesn't say, it's grama, but because...
Look at Rashi. He seems to be describing grama. Me'elein yotzin. What does me'elein yotzin sound like to you? Me'elein yotzin means it happens on its own. Meaning, say, grama.
Does the word groma appear anywhere in any of these sources? Which is interesting. I don't know. Like,
it's interesting.
Specifically not groma, or is groma they just use?
Sounds to me like groma. You're raising an interesting question. Now, so I was the one that discovered this halacha. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach discovered it. He also wasn't the first. He's discussing a different question, which we'll get to a little bit later. Fascinating question. But he wonders maybe this could be the basis of permitting it. So if you look at source 11, this is from the Mincha Shlomo, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's Tshuva, and we'll read from where it's underlined. Mikol makom yeshlomar deshani hotzad avim melach grua the lo nase klal shum hischadshos beguf hadavar lachein lo aminan ba time adam lachas machshaves asratar lechayev gam al gram melachas hotza velo mechayev elim kain kol hotza metchilo veatzof nase samamish al yado mashein kain b'sham melachos. Okay, so he says, well, maybe we can't learn, we can't extrapolate from Hotza'a tather melachos. Why not? He invokes a principle called
melacha grua.
Melacha grua. So what is melacha grua? Melacha grua is a term. It's not in the Gemara. It's developed by the Rishonim. And the truth is, he's not defining it actually the way Tosfos defines it. Tosfos seems to define melacha grua as a paradoxical melacha. Hotza'a is a paradoxical melacha because you're motzi mirshus l'rishus. Sometimes it's chayef, like rishus ayachtus rabim. Sometimes it's pater or even motor, like rishus rabim to rishus ayachet to rishus ayachet. But the way the Or Zerua defines melacha grua, which is what he's citing, is that hotza'a is unique. Maybe there's some other melachos that are similar, but hotza'a is unique in the sense that there's no change to the chefza. It's not a creative act. I simply take my keys, let's say, and I walk from my house into the street, my house being Rosh Hashayachid, street being Rosh Hashirabim, that's a melacha. Almost all the other melachos, maybe all the other melachos, are creative acts. There's some change, some improvement. When I cook something, it goes from being raw to cooked. When I write, when I build, even when I plant, it's a creative act, it's an effective act. Something happens to the object upon which the melacha is being performed. Hotza'a is an exception. And in fact, Tosa says, that's why, you're only, we need a pasuk telling me you're chayef hotza. All the other malachos, and for that matter, all the other toldos, don't really have psukim saying that you're chayef. We derive them from the Mishkan. I wouldn't have known hotza from the Mishkan, even though he certainly did hotza in the Mishkan. And even once I know hotza, I wouldn't have known toldos. Why? Because it doesn't seem like a malacha. It's not creative in any way. So therefore, it needs a pasuk. So, says Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, because hotza is a malacha grua, perhaps we can't extrapolate from hotza. Perhaps when it comes to hotza, we're going to be mekel in grama. Even though usually, like we said for Zorah, you're chayev in grama, malachas machsheves asar Torah, maybe that's a general rule. Okay, you have to figure out why mechab is different. But I can't extrapolate, I can't learn a halacha, a kula in hotza'a to other malachos. Why? Hotza'a is a malacha grua. It's a defective malacha. So it's only chayev when it's done directly. It's only asar, maybe midrabanan. But when it's indirect, when it's grama in this way, then it's mutter. But maybe that's limited to hotza'a. Says Rosh Hashanah Zalman, therefore I can't extrapolate just because this type of indirect pouring into the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim would be mutter for grama, that doesn't mean it's mutter for Zoraya. So this tremendous cool I came up with from Hotza'a is not a ironclad basis for leniency when it comes to Zoraya. Maybe I can't extrapolate from Hotza'a to here. So let's go back to the source that grama is permissible, or at least with Makom Hesed, and that's the Malach of Kiboy. And here we're going to look at a Meiri on Daf Kuf Chaf Amud Beis and Mesech HaShabbos. The Gemara over there says, very interesting halacha, Shachach Ner Daluk Al Gabe HaTavla. I left my lit candle on top of, let's say, a table or a bench or something like that. So here's the problem. Let's say it's a chest, right? I left a candle lit on my chest. Now, the problem is, I want to open my chest or use my chest. So I need to get the candle off of it. Now, it's not going to be a basis in terms of muksa because it was shachach. I forgot that by accident. But the question is, how do I move this lit candle, right? And the problem, of course, is that the candle is muksa, among other things. So the Gemara says, Mina'er es hatavla v'hino feles. So you can lift up my chest, the candle will slide off, and then I'll be able to access my chest. That's what I could do. Now, we know that when we're not dealing with buses and you need access to something, niur is mutter. You're allowed to do niur. If I go ahead and I left something muksa on my table by accident, I could pick up my table and the muksa will slide off onto the floor and the thing won't be on my table. That's called niur, and that's generally speaking mutter for muksa, assuming it's not a basis, assuming that I didn't intentionally leave the muksa there on Shabbos. So that's a great solution. The only problem is, what happens when I slide my candle off the table? It's going to, well, okay, let's say I'm not worried about that. It's going to go out, right? The candle's going to go out. So this is kibbuy. It's kibbuy. How is it permissible? How is it permissible? So the Meiri addresses this issue, and he gives a number of possibilities. One possibility is you do it so gently and softly, maybe the candle won't go out. You don't just, tilt the chest such that the candle lands on the floor. I don't know. You put a chair next to it, and you gently tilt the chest. The candle will slide onto a chair, and it will remain upright. Maybe it won't. It won't go off if you're very careful. Okay, that's one possible answer. Another possibility is it's a psik resha de lo nichale and an iser de rabbanon. There are some rishonim who are lenient for a psik resha de lo nichale and an iser de rabbanon. That's another possibility. Then Amiri gives a third, or actually a fourth possibility, which is relevant for us. This is where it's bolded. V'yesh mefarshim shemeachar she'eino mechabe elagorim bepsik resha mutter. What's he answering? Miri is saying over here that maybe psikresha begrama is mutter, even though we're machmir for psikresha, and even a psikresha deloni chalei, and we're machmir for grama as well, but psikresha begrama is mutter. When you combine those two things, it's hatter. Why? The only time grama is asur midrabanan is when it's mechavein. But if it's eino mechavein, even though it's psikresha, it's inevitable, then it's mutter. Says the Meiri, at least in one explanation, Sikresha Bigram is mutter. And there are other Rishonim that might say this as well, maybe a Shulte Gibor, maybe others. So if we hold to this Meiri, then we're in great shape. Sikresha Bigrama is mutter, and certainly when you're dealing with an Isser Drabanan, but Sikresha Bigrama is mutter. So that's exactly what we have over here. In our case, it's a Sikresha. And again, a psikresha lo nichale, so it's even better. It's a psikresha, my picking up the tarp will cause the water to roll down from my schach onto my driveway into my front yard. It's a psikresha, but it's grama, and if psikresha, the grama is mutter, then it's okay. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in source number 13, makes a similar argument to permit the opening of a refrigerator on Shabbos. Not a refrigerator with your light on, but a refrigerator with your light off. We all probably open up our refrigerators on Shabbos. Now, that might seem like something that's obviously permissible, but if you stop and think about it, it's actually very problematic. Because when I open up my refrigerator, that causes the compressor, the engine, to start running. Now, it doesn't necessarily happen immediately. Refrigerators operate on a thermostat with basically a range. Let's say my refrigerator is set to 34 degrees. Now, we'll talk now about old-fashioned refrigerators. Newer refrigerators that are much more high-tech, are much more sensitive, and present additional problems. They also might have additional solutions like Shabbos mode or the like. But let's talk about the more basic refrigerator, what Rav Shlomo Zalman is talking about. So, what happens? I have a refrigerator, and it's set to, 34 degrees. It's not, the old-fashioned ones don't even tell you what temperature, 1 through 8. But basically, that's just a thermostat. So let's say it's 34. So what happens is that when it reaches 35 degrees, the compressor will run till it gets down to, let's say, 33 degrees. Then it'll go off. It'll be off for some time. And then again, when it reaches 35, it'll run till it goes down to 33 again. Those are made up numbers. You could set it as you wish. Might be a bigger range. I give 3 degrees. It might be a range of 8 degrees. That way the engine isn't always going on and off, on and off. So if I open up my refrigerator, what's going to happen? Of course, warm air rushes in, the temperature rises, and my engine will start, the compressor will start running. Now, that might not happen right away. Perhaps the compressor would not have, if I left it closed, it would start in 8 minutes, and now that I've opened it, it'll start in 2 minutes. If I leave it open for long enough, it might start in 1 minute or 30 seconds. I don't know exactly. If the compressor is already running, then that's one thing. But if the compressor is off, if the engine is off, and I open my refrigerator, I am inevitably causing it to go on sooner. Not immediately, but sooner. So this would seem to be an example of grumma. It's not happening immediately. I'm not directly turning on the engine. I'm not pressing the switch. So it's grumma. It's indirect, but it's also a psikresha. It's inevitable. So opening up a refrigerator is a psikresha begrumma. Now, as I mentioned, there are those that are machmir. There are those that only open up their refrigerator when the engine's already running, for example. Most poskim, most people, certainly in America, in Eretz Yisrael, they're more machmirim, but are makel on this shaila. They open up the refrigerator whenever they want, and that will cause the engine to run more quickly. Why is this permissible? And it's not, by the way, just refrigerators. It's relevant for ovens. It's relevant for opening up your house when the air conditioning is on or the heating is on. Thermostat, right? But Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is discussing refrigerators over here. And again, maybe there's a difference between deraisas like in a heater, or derabbanans like a refrigerator. Or Rosh Shlomo Zalman is makel based off of more or less this principle that psik resha begrama is mutter. Psik resha begrama is mutter. And therefore, if we accept Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach's tshuva, and we open up our refrigerators on Shabbos, and there might be other factors there, but more or less, if we accept Rosh Shlomo Zalman and we open up refrigerators on Shabbos, then I think it should likewise be permissible to take your tarp off, assuming that the tarp drains onto your driveway and rolls onto the grass. It's a psik resha b'mutter based off of this Meiri, based off of this tshuva of Shlomo Zalman and others. In fact, Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in source 14, is makel. This is quoted from Shmei Shabbos Kilchasa, on a similar type of question, maybe even a little worse. Here's talking about a case where you have a sink that drains into the garden. This is common, I think, in camps. I remember in camp we had such a sink where there was outside washing, and if you looked under the sink, there was a pipe. The pipe would flow for about 10, 15 feet, and then abruptly end. Where? In the grass, right? Great way to water your grass. It didn't drain into the sewage. So is it permissible to use such a sink on Shabbos? It's basically the same question, right? It's a psik resha. I'm watering my hands. Begrama, because the water in this case will drain down the pipe, drain for 10 feet and end up in the grass. Same question. And Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is Meikel. Take a look. Last source. En choshashin lashkayat hazraim shetayaseh al yedei netilat yadayim im amnam en kavanato eleha. That's not my kavanah to water the grass. Most people don't even notice where the pipe leads. They just wash their hands. They don't pay much attention. Some people look and they notice, where is this going? Right? So I'm not mechavein. If my intention is to water my grass, then it'll be aser. But that's not my kavanah. I just want to wash my hands. Mekevan she'enu mechavein lotzia mayim lashkot bahem. Ve'afal pishavei psikresha. Kevan denasa yidei koach she'ini. Koach she'ini is grama. Dechashev ragrama ein lasor ki agavna davei psikresha. So this is essentially the same question that we have. Taking up your tarp, the water flows down your driveway into your front yard, waters your grass, and again, assuming you have a situation where it doesn't drain directly into the grass, but it drains only indirectly into the grass, based off of these leniencies of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, I think there is a basis for leniency. Yes?
First of all, another situation. Suppose it's Shabbos, Sukkot's going into Yom Tov. You need your Shabbos Sukkot in the Sukkot. There's the forecast is for rain. Are you allowed to roll the top down to see a yotam meal?
Hachana question. Okay, that's a different child. We'll talk about it later. But hachana is an important question, but a different question. So let's.
Okay. Is we only considered, you know, segregation. What happens if aren't you completing a kosher sukkah on Shabbos when you're?
It should be tikkun kli. It's also an interesting question. Not our topic. It is okay, but you're raising an interesting question. Why isn't it misakein? Good question. But again, let's stay focused on the issue of Zoraya. Yes. If that's the case, then there's a problem. That's correct. And you have to know how your refrigerator works. If your refrigerator is such, you know, my old-fashioned refrigerator does not do that. You could hear it. You open the door. When it's running, it doesn't change. You could very easily hear when it's running and when it's not running, and it has no effect. But if you have a model where by opening the door, it will stop the compressor from running, so then if it's an old-fashioned one, you can tape down the thing that pops up, and that would solve the problem. If it's a newer model, you'll need to get a Shabbos mode type thing, but you're right. That case is totally different. We're only dealing with a case where it is no effect other than causing the compressor to start running sooner. And as I said, especially with more newer models, there are many additional factors that complicate things. As I said, their thermostats are more sensitive. They have an effect on the issue of the where they cause the humidity level and the water draining to burn that off. There's a lot of additional factors in the more modern refrigerators that are beyond the scope of today's discussion. Yes?
In the last case you cited, I'm not sure why it was a grumma. It was going from the pipe directly onto the grid.
Because you pour it onto the sink, it drains down the pipe. Down the
Isn't
pipe.
Is that all considered one?
That's like kol sheni, like in a gemara, or a bit kedemaya kol sheni. It's like opening up the faucet and killing the guy downstream. It's more or less equivalent to that case, right? That's considered kol sheni. Again, you have to figure out why, but that would, at least for Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, considers that kol sheni. You're right, it's not so pashut. Yes?
So for the refrigerator case, does that mean if you leave the door open, let's say for a couple minutes, like being a lot of stuff, the compressor will turn on?
So that's an interesting question. In that case, can I open up the fridge and leave it on for a while? Because it still doesn't happen immediately, but it's true my act directly causes it. Good question. Not for now. For now, all we're permitting is opening up the fridge, and not for such a long time that inevitably your action is going to directly turn it on, but only by making it earlier. Now, sometimes it might go on as soon as they open the door, because, like we said, let's say the thermostat is set for 35 and it's 34.9. I open it, and that puts it over. But I have no idea what it is. I don't know if it's close to the threshold or not. So opening the refrigerator door is permissible because that it's definitely going to cause it to happen quicker, but it may or may not cause it to happen immediately. Chevra, this has been a pleasure. It's such an interesting topic. And as you see, it relates to so many other topics. So you should we should all be zocha to have a yachag kasher v'sameach. Hopefully it won't rain too much. We won't have to worry about this.
We bought a refrigerator in Eretz Yisrael. Has the thing that they actually give you a little plastic thing to stick in to hold it in place
right.
for Shabbos.
Right.
It's
and
a little tiny, it's about so big.
Right.
Hope you don't lose it.
Right. Exactly.
Can I ask a question about what about the water fountains? I know the water fountains is a big shaila and like you get a lot of things. Is that not
a similar question is that immediate? So they